the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 2nd, 2014, and you're listening to episode 105 of our crazy show. My name is Rob. Sitting across from you there is Mr. Jason. What's up, man?
Hello, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, just splendid.
Splendid. I heard a big bump from below the floor here, so I think my wife just knocked something over or something. I don't know.
Let's hope it wasn't something
heavy. She'll survive. Let's move on.
I didn't hear a shattering. So that's
no,
good.
There was no crash. There was no scream of pain. Just a loud thump. So, fingers crossed.
Lovely.
Yeah. You had a big event that we've been teasing for a little while in a few episodes.
What, the baby?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought that's what you're talking about, but I guess we haven't recorded since then.
No, we have not.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, so there's a baby.
There's a baby. There's a new baby.
I don't sleep a lot. What? Yeah.
Yeah. The Slingerland family has grown by 25%.
Yeah. True story.
Yeah. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, everything's going good.
Yeah, you look like you might fall asleep right here while we're talking.
I'm not that tired. No, okay. But no, I am definitely getting to bed later than normal and up at the same time. So mm-hmm.
good times. Good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another gamer in the making.
Right. That goes away pretty quick. The whole. Oh, I'm up too late waiting for baby and stuff like that. So
okay,
at least it did last time. Maybe it will this time. Maybe it will not this time. I don't know, but
fingers crossed, huh?
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm hoping.
Well, that's fun. That's exciting and exhausting, and I'm not jealous at all.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not surprised.
You're so lively this evening.
Yeah, it's also about 2 million degrees in this room.
Yeah, well, the summer is here.
So it feels like the surface of the sun once again in our recording
studio. It's not that bad yet. Don't worry, it'll get worse. It'll get worse.
Sure it will.
Just, you know it will.
I know it will.
Yeah, this is our third summer doing this. You know.
You haven't put the air conditioner in yet.
No, because I haven't needed it. This is the first. I just put the one in our bedroom like 2 days ago, so I haven't needed it yet. I will probably this weekend, though.
How do you, like, does it have, like, a safety thing? So, like, when you put it in so it doesn't, like, just fall?
The safety thing is my muscles.
I'm really surprised you've never dropped it then.
Me too, because those things are heavy. But no, I mean, you just stick it in there and you are careful until you close the window.
So if you open the window, it's loose?
If you're not going to drop it unless you're an idiot. Okay. You've never put it in a window unit before?
And we have central air.
Yeah, okay, not even in an apartment or something?
There was a built-in one there. Okay. It was just a window unit, but it was built into the wall.
Okay. They're not that terribly. I mean, they're super heavy, but unless you're a total idiot, you're not going to drop it.
Good to know.
I mean, okay, so you might drop it, but...
I wouldn't put one in.
Yeah, you'd call me, so I would come over and do it for you.
Or Will. He'd be more likely to come over and do it. You do it yourself.
I would laugh at you and then hang up the phone. It's true.
But Will would be like, yeah, man, I'll come do it. No problem.
Whatever.
And then he would do it.
Yeah. And
he's a good friend. He likes to help people.
He's a good friend, right. Better than me. It's true. So, yeah, summer's here. What you been playing?
Recently, I got to play a game with my son, who's only two. So that's always interesting. We played Don't Break the Ice.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
It's the first game I remember playing. I'm sure that I played other games before that, but that is the first game I remember playing. And I've mentioned that before. So I saw it at Toys R Us for like $5 a while back and couldn't resist.
Yeah.
So I picked it up. And so we've played it a couple times now. We played it again this week. And it's kind of like teaching him to, you know, be soft with the little hammer thing.
Because he just wants to smash it, right?
Yeah, he just wants to take his hand. Like, the first game that we played took about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I put it together for, like, 5 minutes, and then he just smashed his hand through it and laughed.
Well, because that'd be pretty funny.
Yeah,
I'm laughing just thinking about it.
So now he holds the hammer, and then we've been teaching him how to take turns, which is kind of cool. Like, all right, buddy, like, your turn, and then he knocks the little block through, and then he wants to do it again, and I stop him. I'm like, nope, it's Dad's turn now, and I do it. And then he's like, Josiah's turn! And then he knocks another one through.
Okay.
So, yeah. And he alternates between using the hammer and just smashing it with his hand or pushing with his finger. Like, he pretty much does whatever he wants. So, he's learning. Yeah, but the games are now taking a good 2 to 2.5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Which is awesome. Because then...
Yeah, four to five times the amount of time spent.
Right. So, we play a few games because the setup time is not... But he has actually figured out, like, he watches how I do the setup. So, now he helps me, hands me the block. So, that's good. Going a little faster,
too. Yeah, that's good. Right on. Don't Break the Ice. That is one of those classics...
Yeah, he's not old enough to play Water Balloon Washout yet, so
yeah.
We'll work on this
another 6 months and then it'll be okay, right?
It's Gotta teach him to read first.
Yeah. Right on. Well, that's fun.
You've been playing anything?
Yeah. We played in the Year of the Dragon. In the Year of the Dragon. Which is one that Christine grabbed at Gen Con 2 years ago. So that would have been Gen Con 2012.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was the year of our overkill where we came home with like 24 games. I don't think it was that many. It was close, though.
I want to say it was like 14 or something.
Yeah. Might have been 16.
I remember it was a lot.
It was too many. But it's one of those that she bought. She found it for like $5. And we didn't know anything about it, but the theme looked neat, and it was $5, so why the heck not? And then it sat in our cabinet for a couple of years, year and a half, let's say. And one day recently, we busted that out on a Saturday night and decided to give it a try. And holy cow, what a great game.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a super great game. It's to explain it to anybody out there who doesn't know, and to you... the players are like, I don't know what to call you. Are you like lords or something in ancient Japan? And you're trying to build pagodas and attract villagers and people to your pagodas to bring you glory, I guess. The game has 12 turns because it takes place in a year.
The year of the dragon,
okay. Right? And each of the 12 months, there's a random tile calls in some kind of special condition. You know, there might be a war tile, where for every soldier you have in your village or in one of your pagodas, for every soldier you get a victory point. There is a month of famine, and for every villager, every person you have in your pagodas, you have to turn in a certain number of rice. And if you don't have enough rice to feed the people in the Time of Phantom, then you have to throw out some people. Some people die and they get discarded back to the box.
So it's the same 12 events that happen every year. You just don't know the order.
Right. Well, cool. They're shuffled every time and they're revealed at the start of the game. So at the start of the game, you know what's coming and when it's going to happen.
Nice.
So you can plan ahead for that.
That's cool.
And so on your turn, you can build more stuff on your pagoda, and you can gain more people. And some people are going to give you benefits right away, and some people are going to help you deal with bad events that are coming up. And some people are completely useless during the game, but are going to give you bonus points at the end of the game.
Okay.
And so it's pretty ingenious. It was super easy to learn, and the strategy just looks to be crazy, crazy awesome. Two-player game played pretty quick. I think a four-player game would take a little bit longer. Yeah. I think we played it in about 45 minutes.
Is it kind of a Euro style?
Oh, it's very Euro. Yep. It's extremely Euro, yeah.
Just because you said there were people that don't do anything but give you points at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I heard Euro when you said that.
Right. It's kind of a neat thing where there's a victory point track, and then there's like a people track, and whoever has the most is highest in the position on the people track goes first on a given turn. So some turn you might want to just be player one, and so you might, you know, the next turn you want to be player one, so you might just buy some people or hire or recruit some people on the current turn to give you no benefit other than for you to be player one next time, which is, you know, can be extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've only played the game once. I completely slaughtered Christine, just wiped the floor with her. But that was because we were learning. We didn't know what we were doing. And I happened to pick lucky in the beginning. She happened to pick unlucky because we didn't know what we were getting.
And now you'll probably lose every time.
Probably, right, because that's the MO there. Usually, first time we play, I beat her butt into the ground. And then every time after that, she destroys me. Standard procedure for us playing games at home.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, so In the Year of the Dragon is excellent. I looked it up. It looks like it might be out of print. And I saw a copy on eBay for like $150.
So I didn't buy two copies for $5.
Yeah, right. It was Rio Grande. I guess Rio Grande is not printing much anymore.
A lot of games I got from the Rio Grande booth over the years are games that are out of print now.
Hey, let's just move on to our feature of the week, huh?
Let's.
Okay. This was your idea. We were talking today about reusing old ideas, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even, you know, like ones that are out there, ones that, you know, you've done, you've given to people, they've seen,
right?
Maybe print and plays, maybe published, whatever. But kind of taking that game as a base idea,
yep,
and then turning it into something new, It's different. You know, so this situation happened recently where I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about Water Balloon Washout.
Yeah.
They were saying, hey, I wish this was a more strategic gamery game for, like, hardcore, or not hardcore, but for, like, super, you know, gamers who really want all strategy all the time.
Yeah.
And less randomness.
Yeah.
And they had said, here's some ways I think you could achieve that. And it got me thinking about a new idea. And, like, wow, I'm like, I could really kind of retcon this, right? And mm-hmm. make a new game that has some similarities, some homages, but is still quite different. And I'll actually pitch that game later. So I'm not going to go into a bunch of detail about that game. But I at least wanted to just say that's kind of what started the initial thought for me about that. And I know other designers do this, especially for games that that they don't publish or that they don't do anything with. But I've also heard designers talk about doing this with games they've either published or have print and plays out there and they've done a lot of work on it. And then they're like, mm-hmm. hey, like, I should take that idea and make it something different. You did that most recently with the tower building game by turning it into Innkeepers. And,
you
know, that's been a smashing success compared to the last one, which was cool mechanics, but super boring. And this is...
I don't know if smashing is the right word, but so far it's significantly more successful than tower.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
The theme is good and the mechanics are good. And it used to be the mechanics were cool, but the game was super boring.
Right.
I would call that a smashing success.
Big improvement. Yeah. Yeah, well, we do that a lot, right? This is kind of part of the fun of what we've been doing here is that we've been able to record and document so many of our old ideas that were terrible and been able to go back to them and say, hey, what do I remember about that game or what about that idea? What was fun? What was good? What was bad? How can I incorporate that into new stuff?
Right.
Yeah. I also did that last week with that Band-Aid game that I was doing. I was kind of inspired by the old Slenderman game. Which was a ridiculous kind of change over there from Slenderman to boo-boos and Band-Aids.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, that is quite the change.
Yeah, but...
it's about as crazy of a change as it gets, actually.
Yeah. So what then is the crux of the topic here? Is it... it's not just, hey, is that okay? Or, hey, is that a good idea?
Well, I mean, let's start with, hey, is that okay? Uh-huh. I think so.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
I've seen other people do it, you know. And I think that if you have some mechanics that are good and they work,
yeah,
and you can think of a way to repurpose those in a different way,
yep.
Why not? I mean, we all do that with games in general, right?
Sure.
Hey, we play a game, I really like this game, I really like this mechanic. Mm-hmm. Hey, what could I do? How could I bring something new to that mechanic, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really falls into line with what we're already doing and everyone's already doing, all designers. I mean, unless you come up with that truly unique mechanic mm-hmm. where you're like, this is the mechanic, right?
Right.
This has not been used before in this way.
Right.
Or even at all. But, I mean, most of the time we're saying, here are some interesting mechanics from different games that I like. How can I tweak those and make them my own and put them together to have a whole new creation? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the fundamental idea is not that I'm taking inspiration from other things. The concept here, I think, is that you're taking a pre-existing game, whole package,
right,
and making adjustments to it to make something better or different.
You just... metamorphosizing it into
he evolves into the next generation, the next evolutionary step.
Right. Now it's a land creature. It's a mammal.
Right.
Well, first it was a lizard, then it was a mammal, but you get what I mean.
first it was a fish.
I meant when it was first on land, it was a lizard.
Uh-huh.
Amphibian, probably.
You're a creationist, aren't you?
I don't understand. I'm just trying to explain to you. I saw a video and the things were crawling out.
Uh-huh.
So
it went from a lizard to...
there are some fish that actually jump onto land and do stuff and then jump back into the water.
The mud skipper.
Yeah.
There was in Ren and Stimpy, there was a mud skipper character in Ren and Stimpy, wasn't there? I think there was.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure there was.
All I remember from Ren and Stimpy are two things. Idiot and
idiot.
Yeah, I'm not going to translate like that. Uh-huh. And then the log song.
Log.
That's it. That
it's
is
big,
my.
It's heavy. It's wood.
That is what I remember from Ren and Stimpy.
It's better than bad. It's good.
Right.
Everyone wants a log. Come in and get your log.
So yeah.
It's log, log, log. I'm done now.
Good. I'm really, really happy that you're done with that. Okay. So, All right, so let's. How do we want to talk about this? Because we're always super prepared when we come to this show.
Yeah, so we prepare minutes in advance.
Well, we've been told by many listeners that they like our fresh outlook and off the cuffness, and we would never want to prepare too much and ruin that. So
that's true. That's true. We wouldn't want to do anything like research. okay, so the idea is how do we want to approach this topic of conversation? Okay, so well, one of our favorite things to do is brainstorm a new game idea inspired by whatever the topic is, so we could come at it from that way and pick some old game and try and revamp it.
We could totally do that.
We could do that. You're going to do that, though, for your game pitch.
I am going to do that for my game pitch.
So maybe we don't want to do that.
Maybe then we'd be pitching the same thing twice.
Yeah. Are we afraid, maybe, that by working from an old idea to turn it into something new, that we are stifling some creativity? Is that a concern at all?
I don't think so. I mean, wait, I guess my concern would be that someone's outside opinion might be one-trick pony, right? One-hit wonder. Okay. Like, oh, you've got one thing you're good at, so just keep doing that. But I mean, that, like, if you were going to be a jerk and say that, which, first of all, I don't think is fair, I mean, look at somebody like Matt Leacock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great dude. Two super popular games. He's done other games too, but two that everyone knows, right?
Right.
At the core, that card mechanic where, like, you take the cards that just came up and then put them back on the shuffle them, put them on the top of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I believe that is used in Pandemic and in Forbidden Island, right?
Okay.
That's a core mechanic of the game. And that's a mechanic that, I mean, the way I understand it, I could be wrong, listeners, please tell me if I'm wrong, but that's his mechanic. Like, that's the big thing he did with the gaming community. Like, he added that.
Sure.
And it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, it's totally brilliant. It's super mean, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes those games really difficult.
Yeah.
But I've never heard someone be like, oh, that dude, man, oh, he's got one mechanic, he's just rehashing it. But it's because the games are fundamentally different, right?
Sure.
So I guess what you worry about, if you're repurposing a game more so than just that one feature, does that make people be like, you're just copying yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. You had one good idea and nothing since then.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, first of all, if that game was never published, I don't think you could ever, you know, unless literally you just kept remaking the same game, published or not, I think that is a bit much.
Well, so maybe we're lucky to be, or we benefit from our still being new at this gig here.
I mean, that said, the game that I revamped is Waterbone Washer.
Sure, yeah.
So, but I mean, I didn't sell it to like AEG or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I still published it meagerly on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, all right.
I think if you're going to do it right, I think that you take let's say the game is a published game. A game you worked on is published. I think if you're going to start with that game as a core and then say, how do we make it different? You need to make sure it's different enough that it stands on its own. And then when people play it, they say, oh, this has some similarities to this game. This has some similarities to Pandemic or Forbidden. I don't remember which one came first. I think it was Pandemic.
You know who we've talked to who's done this before is Bruno Cathala, because he talked about his Mr. Jack series.
You're right.
You know, that he started with Mr. Jack and then he moved on to, there's four or five different versions of Mr. Jack.
Well, there's Mr. Jack Pocket. There's,
and then
Phantom of the Opera, right? That's the big one, where it's a different game.
Right. But he's kind of said that, you know, Mr. Jack Pocket was sort of the simplification of the ideas from Mr. Jack. And then after Mr. Jack Pocket, he said he took those concepts and the way that worked and converted that into Phantom of the Opera, where it just kind of was the whole system. The whole Mr. Jack system was working better than ever for him.
Right. And I think nobody could fault him for making Mr. Jack and then making Mr. Jack Pocket, right?
Yeah, no.
And that's pretty common. I mean, we see like TC did that with Viva Java and then Viva Java Dice, because you say, hey, you like this in this format. What if I make a smaller, different version, but with the same theme? You're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Brewcrafters, right? Dice Amy is publishing the Brewcrafters card game now after publishing Brewcrafters.
Right.
So I think if people were going to be upset, they'd be upset about Phantom of the Opera, right?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's no reason to be upset, because just don't buy it.
Yeah.
But you should buy it, though, because it's freaking amazing.
Right, yeah.
I've never played Mr. Jack, but Phantom of the Opera, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, super good. Yeah, well, so, you know, I guess that's just it. If it's a fun game, then who cares? Why does it matter?
Well, you know, that's an... Well, I mean, that makes me think of the whole conversation we had about zombie dice and hunting dice or whatever they call it at Walmart. Literally the exact same game.
Right.
But they swapped out the theme.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about an evolution of the game, not just a straight-up re-theme.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because a re-theme is kind of lazy and kind of just a marketing trick. And maybe that's okay. You know what? Frankly, that probably is okay.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean,
yeah.
Because you're just trying to make it more approachable. And approachability, we've agreed, is a huge thing to us.
It absolutely is. It's a huge thing to people buying a game. So, you know, that's okay. But we want to make sure that we say clearly that this topic then, that this concept that we are fans of, is not just simply retheming. It's
right.
It's taking an older idea and evolving it into something better than the original.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, granted, we haven't tried this yet, but Marvel Dice Masters might be a good example, right?
Yeah.
Because Quarriors was a game. It was popular. Mm-hmm. People liked it. And they said, we're going to take this system, and then we're going to change the system and retheme it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the ticket right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you make it its own thing. I mean, they've done this several times with Settlers, right?
Sure.
I mean, there's even the Settlers of America now, which is kind of like they took every game they ever made and made it into one big game.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to include in this, though, all the different, you know, branded versions of Monopoly and
Risk. No.
Because I don't think that's a fair.
But mechanically, those are pretty much the same game.
Well, I think a lot of the movie-themed and cartoon-themed versions of Monopoly and Life and stuff. I think a lot of those introduce new mechanics, especially different versions of Risk introduce new mechanics.
Good point, yeah.
Risk Legacy, of course, being an outlier. But,
right, yeah.
You know, all the different licensed properties that they slap on top of those things, I'm not sure that that's a fair assessment. So maybe you know, Star Trek Catan is not a fair analogy here for an evolution of a game.
Well, though,
I don't know.
I think it might be a decent example because I've heard it's quite different.
Is it really?
Okay. But anyways, I mean, I guess what we want to focus on is taking a design you made as a designer, because like with those other ones, you could argue that they're being passed off to different people and, you know, throughout these big companies. Whereas we're saying, like, I'm a designer. I designed a game.
Yeah.
I like the game. People seem to like the game. And now, a year later, I say, hey, I think I can do something else with this game. Mm-hmm. I think I could take the core mechanics of this game and I could change them.
Mm-hmm.
But still keep a feeling, like, with basically to say, like, have you played this game? Yes. Then this game will be easier for you to play, because you already kind of have an idea of how it works. Here's how it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can put, like, a percentage on it. Like, well, 50% of the mechanics need to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think it needs to be a good portion of the mechanics need to be different, right? Because otherwise, I mean, otherwise you're just working on the same game again, right?
Yeah.
Yes, no? I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're saying a lot of yes and hmms.
Well, I'm just trying to think through what we've been talking about. So we always want to try and gain some kind of better understanding of whatever topic we're discussing here. So how are we getting to that point here?
First of all, we don't always have to gain a better understanding. Maybe sometimes our listeners do.
Yeah.
In fact, we were talking about that earlier. Another topic we talked about where listeners are like, you guys hit the nail on the head, and we felt kind of lost. Yeah. So,
taking old ideas and reworking them is a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. And it's a good exercise, right? When we talk about designing with constraints, I mean, that's kind of what you're doing now.
It's true.
Instead of constraints, you're designing with a starting point.
Right.
With
a framework in place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're saying, I like this framework. Mm-hmm. How do I make it better? How do I make it different? Maybe it's not about being better. Maybe it's just about making it different for a different set of people.
Yeah, so then I guess the lesson here is if anybody out there is concerned about coming back to their old ideas and reusing old ideas, the advice is don't be concerned about that. Coming back to old ideas and changing them and building from them is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I think In fact, yeah, I mean, I think designers just should do that. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about going back to a game that you designed 5 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, once we've been designing for that long, like, you take a game, like the first game you made, you know, like, what different perspective do you have to put on that game now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of a neat way to track where you've come from.
Sure.
And where you've gone. I mean, I think that's really cool. Just to kind of explore that process of you changing as a designer.
Yeah.
Because even in the short time we've been designing, we've both changed a lot as designers.
Lot. Immensely.
I mean, like, I can't even describe how much we've changed. Mm-hmm. Tons.
Yeah.
And that's great.
It is
because,
great.
You know, I mean, what is, you know, something I like doing is just looking back at old designs, like even rough designs, rough notes, and saying like,
sure,
oh gosh, this could work this way and this could work that way. Now, that's not the same thing. Obviously, that's not, here's a game you're playing.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a new game out of this game. You know, when designers out there, if you've got friends you design with, swap games with them. Look sure. at, if they've got an old game they're interested in, talk to them. Ask if you could, steal some of it and try something else. You know, I think that's a good exercise
yeah.
to do, you
yeah.
know?
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough of this, huh?
Yeah. So we are pro.
We are pro. We are very pro reusing old ideas.
Yeah.
And building from them.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe you didn't care that we're pro of that, but we are. Mm-hmm.
We are
very pro of that.
Big time pro. All right. Practicing the pitch time.
Yes, yes, yes.
Give us your pitch today.
All right. So I mentioned that I talked to somebody and they had said, hey, here's some ways I think you can make Water Balloon Washout could have been a more focused game towards high strategy. Like, you know, maybe high strategy is a bad example, but to make it very strategic. Very little randomness, very much more strategicness. And I thought that sounds kind of interesting. And so I thought about it. I thought about it for, I don't know, about 3 hours. And I went to go to bed. And as I went to go to bed, I found myself pulling my laptop back out and logging onto Google Drive.
Yeah.
And just starting a document and starting typing. Because what I was thinking to myself was, if I was going to try and do something like that, I would want a stark retheme that made the game very different.
Yeah.
And then I would want to change a lot of the mechanics to where only the very base gameplay, like the very basic, maybe 10% of the gameplay is like, oh, that's like Water Balloon Washout. So I thought to myself, what's the core of that gameplay for me? And to me, it was, you've got people in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, you've got characters in front of you, we'll say. And you're trying to eliminate all the other players by playing cards on them.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has to be hit twice. You're hit once and something happens. You're hit again and you're out. And so I got to thinking, like, everything I could think of was war or spies. And I just didn't like any of that. I wanted something fun and really different. And a word popped into my head. And that word was zoopocalypse.
Zoopocalypse.
And I thought, animals in a zoo, like, what if you control a pack of animals that's trying to break out of a zoo? Yeah, right?
Like Madagascar.
Yeah, but with...
Is this Madagascar the game?
Exactly. I'm working on the rights right now.
Good.
Never.
Codename Zoopocalypse.
It's actually Madagascar Zoopocalypse.
Oh, even better.
No, I don't want anything to do with that movie. or movies. I think there was multiple.
Yeah.
They all looked terrible.
And a bunch of things with the penguins and stuff.
So...
Anyway.
So I thought, okay, what are the steps I can do to make this more strategic? Well, one, let's eliminate some randomness. And this was actually a suggestion from my friend, and they had said, what if instead of a draw deck that everyone shared, you had a set deck of cards that you got, right? You would draw them, you could play them, you discard them, but you're stuck with that draw pile until you run out of cards, and then you can shuffle back, right?
Okay.
So 18 cards seem to be a good balancing thing, because you could have X number of attack cards, X number of defense cards, and the X number of special cards, kind of like the utility cards from Water Balloon Washout that let you do other things.
Sure.
And I thought, what could I do with that? So first of all, I wanted to do what I used to love to do all the time, to pay homage to my old style of design, which was, let's make some characters.
Sure.
Let's give everybody a special ability. It was something I fought in Water Balloon Washout because I wanted it to be simpler gameplay.
Yeah.
So this time, I came up with 16 animals. Well, technically, it's 15 animals and a zookeeper, because I thought it would be kind of fun to have one of the animals be like a human instead.
Sure.
So, but we're all animals in the end, so whatever. I figured that worked, right? So, So there's different, you know, there's different animals. There's the wolf, the lion, the giraffe, the zookeeper, the sloth, and each one of those animals has some sort of special ability.
Okay.
And they can use that special ability on your turn. The other thing I wanted to kind of keep from what I really watched out was play two cards. In general, I like the ability to play two cards.
Yeah.
It gives you more options than just playing one. It gives you some more strategic decisions to make. So I thought, all right, what if you could play two cards, but instead of just playing two cards, what if you could play a card to use its ability, or you could discard a card to use the character's ability, right?
Oh.
Or the animal's ability. I thought that sounded kind of cool. And then I thought, well, I can easily scale how powerful an animal's ability is by having you discard more than one card, which that meant at the end, you just draw two. So if I discard two cards to do something at the end of my, and play another card, I'm down three cards. I'm only going to draw two. I have a hand of five. Now I'm down to four. So that's going to keep limiting my options. Some of the animals can force you to, can allow you to discard cards on your opponent's turn. You'll never get those cards back unless you play less than two cards on your turn, right? To help build yourself back up to five. Not a requirement, but it gives you more options. So I thought that was kind of fun strategy-wise.
Sure.
So basically, here's how the game is played. Beginning of the game, everyone is dealt four animals at random. But I didn't want to just leave it at that because I wanted there to be more strategy to
it. So you put drafting into it.
So I put drafting into it.
Yeah, you love drafting.
You know what's funny? I love drafting and prototypes, but then it never makes it to the end.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, I feel like it's a good idea. So you get dealt four cards. You pick one animal. You place it face up in front of you. Pass the other three to the left. Everyone else does that at the same time. Now everybody has three cards. You pick one of those. You put it face down in front of you. So I'm seeing what you're picking. So I can react to your choices. I thought that was kind of a fun open draft style.
Okay.
Where I can try and strategize. Like, oh, you picked the lion. I should pick the boa because I know that will complement me well to try and make it harder for you to use the lion's ability. Okay, so you do that until everybody has four in front of them. So if in a four-player game, everybody gets the last one is just you're screwed. You get the card you get.
Sure.
But in a, you know, in a two-player game, you'd have more options because I probably would have you get dealt five cards to start with then. That way more animals would be in play, you know. So
yeah.
When that's done, you draw five cards and you start playing. So one of the things that I think adds some good strategy to the game as well is, so on your turn, you've got, there are attack cards. Like I said, there's defense cards and then there's the specialty cards. The attack cards allow you to, are like nets and bolas, because I like bolas. I think that's kind of sweet, like bolas, you know?
Bolas?
Bolas. It's like a ball and a rope and a ball, and you like throw it and then it wraps around someone's legs.
Is that called a bola?
Pretty sure it's called a bola.
Oh, I never heard that before.
Yeah.
What,
I heard it called that in something.
Huh. I don't know what I would call that.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like the... A rope with a ball on either end, and it's supposed to wrap around somebody's legs, and they fall over.
But it never works.
Right.
But in the movies...
It's a stupid idea.
Well, yeah, it's terrible. But in the movies and in a game, of course it would work.
Is that called a ball? I feel like that's not the word... anyway, go on.
Anyway. There's tranquilizer darts, and the idea is to capture the animal. So the first time you hit an animal, they're pinned. And what I think is neat about that is, because you all have your own unique decks, when I play a net card on an animal and he's pinned, that net card stays on an animal. I don't have it anymore until I get it back. So, like, I want to think hard about when I play that net on an animal, because say I play a net on an animal and then they put a defensive card in front of themselves and I can't get to them, that's an attack card I lost, and there's only nine attack cards in my deck.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm down to eight.
So everybody's got the same deck, but in their own color, for example, so you can easily keep track of whose card is who. Okay.
So, you know, sometimes you want to get hit. You want to force someone to hit you because it allows you to manipulate their hand. You have a couple defensive cards. When I have those defensive cards out, you know that I have no more defenses, right? So it makes you have to think really hard about what you want to play and what you want to keep kind of hidden.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the idea is the last person standing wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be cool to have, so the specialty cards, there's three specialty cards. There's Crash, which allows you to take out a defensive thing. There's Claws, which allows you to free yourself from a net. And there's Call of the Wild, which allows you to pull in a new animal in, when one of your animals is captured. But then the kind of the real heart of the game is the animal's abilities. And those, I brought the cards with me just so I could read a few abilities and
prototyped
it
already.
I have prototyped it already and everything. So it was about a 24-hour thought process to prototype with this one. So the, for instance, the parrot.
Okay.
The parrot, on your turn, you may discard a card to use the ability of another animal in play.
Okay, makes sense. Parrot will repeat what he hears.
The bald eagle. Discard a card to force an opponent to randomly discard two cards from their hand. So, like, and you can only use these abilities once per turn, so you can't, like, totally gank someone. The zookeeper can only be captured with a tranquilizer gun. So if you're hiding behind a defense, that means you're immune, which is super powerful. But if the zookeeper is your last free animal, you lose the game. So, like, you can't, like, so he's, like, you see what I mean? So he's totally safe if you can set him up correctly, but then you can get totally hosed if he's your last character. So I wanted to kind of, you know, do that. A lasso is another thing you can pin someone with. Like, the giraffe can only be pinned with a lasso because he's tall, so a net's not going to work on him because that would be stupid. The hyena on the opponent's turn can discard cards to force you to attack them and not someone else because they can taunt you with their laughing. The warthog allows you to discard a card immediately to draw another card off the top of the deck. Like, he's rooting around for something, right?
Okay.
The alligator. If you pin the alligator, if somebody pins your alligator, I can automatically play an attack card on you because the alligator's got jaws. He's snapping at you. The sloth. The sloth cannot be targeted with an attack if there's another animal who is unprotected. So, like, another undefended animal. Because he's slow, he's a sloth, nobody cares. And the sloth's penalty is he can't use defense cards. So you can't defend him, but as long as somebody else is defendable, that sloth will never get touched.
Got it.
So, the monkey allows you to take back one of your net cards. Like, so if I have a net on your lion and it's you've made it so that I can't get to it and I really could use it, I could play the monkey to bring that back to my hand.
Seems like his power should be about throwing poo.
I didn't want to go there.
No, I went there.
Yeah, I know. yeah, so that's kind of yeah, that's kind of the thing I wanted to. You know, the zebra, because he's a prey animal, right? Everybody sees him. You can sacrifice him, just throw him away to bring back an animal you already lost who's better than him.
Oh, okay.
So he'd be a nice pairing with a really strong animal. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of the game. So this is the topic for today, right? I mean, I completely retconned an idea I had to make it something different that's has a lot more strategic value. Yeah, and I'm gonna try and get some tests in here, and then I think I'm just gonna bring it to Origins. There's a reason not to. My goal is to bring this and Bullets to Origins, and I'll have Ramblers at Origins too.
Right.
So
we've got one more episode posting here before we go to Origins, right?
Yeah, I think the Origins is on the 14th of June.
Yeah, we're gonna be on the. Look at my calendar.
I think we're gonna be on the 14th. So, folks, while Rob looks this up, let me just tell you, this is gonna be a terrible day.
14th. Yep.
I've got to be to Rob's house at 4:30 in the morning. We're picking up our buddy Andy Lennox, I'm assuming, at like 5:36.
Something like that, whenever we get to where we're going to be in, which will be in Ann Arbor, I expect.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get there by 9:30 is the plan. Spend the whole day there and probably try and leave by 7 or 8, I would guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
The vendor hall closes at 6, so we'll probably, when that's done, we'll probably hang out a little bit, get some dinner, and then head home.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be a day.
We decided Rob was trying to save money and not spend in a hotel room. I was trying to save my wife's happiness and not be gone for the night with the new baby. She was gracious enough to tell me to go for it if I was willing to go for the whole day. And and then Andy was like, you guys are going? I'm on your way. Pick me up.
Yeah.
which is awesome.
I hate your ride.
Because he was the same thing. He just didn't have the time to go for the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
And I'll be bringing innkeepers.
Yep.
And I'll have, I mean, that's the main thing that I'm going to want to be testing and playing with people, but I'll have Epic Monster Tea Party with me, which, by the way, is available now. The deluxe edition is on GameCrafter right now. I'm working on putting together the basic version. I need to finish some artwork for that. But for now, Epic Monster Tea Party Deluxe Edition is available for $25.99 on GameCrafter.
Which is cheaper than you thought it was going
to
be.
It is cheaper than I expected it to be, so I'm very pleased.
And it looks great. I got to see a copy of it. I was very excited.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty pleased. So if it did show up. I had the shipping issues that we talked about before.
Right.
But the second one they sent me came through just fine, and I'm very, very pleased. Very pleased. Couldn't really be happier, I think.
So you're going to have Innkeepers and Monster Tea Party, yep. And are you bringing...
That's all. No, I'm those are the two. Yeah, those are my two.
Because Monster Tea Party is like a game now. So yeah. I was trying to think of another prototype you had, yeah. But I forgot. That's like a game now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that. Innkeepers, I have some work to do to get the next revision of that, all the icons done and the new stuff printed out. But I'm about halfway through that right now. So I'll have that done shortly. Yeah, so pretty exciting.
I'll have with me Waterbloom Watchout, few packs for sale. I won't sell them on Origins premises because nope. I'm sure that's against the rules.
Right.
But I'm sure we can work something out outside of those premises to get that figured out. Anyway, so yeah. And I can even take credit cards at the Square app. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I need to get that. And don't forget, if you find us, tell us that you're a Valiant builder.
Yes!
Oh, did you hear that there's a new Valiant RPG coming out?
I did.
How crazy is that, man?
Wait, so who is making that?
Was it Catalyst or was Catalyst? I want to say it was Catalyst. I'm not 100% sure.
We need to go talk to them at Gen Con.
Yeah.
And tell them we're really into their cards. And maybe they've got more. Maybe they would give us some.
Maybe they would give us something for our cards.
I want to give up our cards.
You know what, listeners? If you come to us and say that you're a Valiant builder and we are out of cards, it's because we were able to trade them with the publisher of this RPG for something way better.
Maybe a pitch meeting.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
If you let us pitch two of our games, yeah. we will give you all of these cards. Why would they want those cards?
I can't imagine why they would want those cards.
I can't imagine why anyone would want those cards, except for you guys, because they're awesome to give to people.
They're awesome because it's a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because exactly. It's funny.
But we will have those, so please, please try and remember that, mm-hmm. And be in the super cool in crowd and mm-hmm. get your Valiant builder cards.
I want to get a frame that I can hang on a necklace or something, you know, like a baseball card frame. Do they make such a thing that can be hung like a pendant on a necklace?
Well, they have like baseball cards that you could probably punch a hole in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, and just wear them around?
Yeah. I just like to wear it around my neck, you know, just nice. Like Brian Johnson. I'm just, you know, hanging there. It's just nice. Be awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
Maybe I can tuck it in my badge holder.
I would rather be Japanese Colossus.
Yeah.
Punisher.
Yeah. I would actually rather be I'd rather be the Cyborg 3 Musketeers.
They're pretty awesome, too.
They're pretty sweet.
All right. So, anyways.
Anyway.
Hey, so we've got a bunch of questions. I think we're going to spread those out over two episodes.
Okay.
Because a couple of them are longer emails. But we got a question on Twitter that I want to handle now. Because
this is a great question.
I think it's a really good question.
I'm going to go ahead and read it.
Yeah.
This is from Richard Durham. He says, what will happen when the ostensible Wild West of high-profile indie game publishing becomes civilized? Well, so referring to what we have right now as kind of a Wild West situation, he's not wrong about that. With Kickstarter being what it is, and the frenzy and the amount of money that is tearing through Kickstarter on indie games, indie publishers, independent publishers, passion projects, you know, it really is a Wild West with crazy stuff going on. So that can't possibly last forever because things go in waves, you know. That's just a fact of...
I was trying to think of another thing that's kind of been like... institutionalized over the years that's changed, and there was something I thought of when I first heard that tweet, and I can't remember now, like if something like something we oh, you know, I can think of a good example.
Okay.
It's kind of off topic, but I'm gonna do it anyways. The film industry, right? Yeah. Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. Had a fun group of independent filmmakers that were just kind of doing their own thing, and then you know, for a while we started getting a bunch of funding and we started getting big mm-hmm. movies in.
The Jennifer Granholm administration put in huge tax credits, biggest in the country, tax credits toward movie productions.
Right.
To attract all kinds of stuff to Michigan.
And at first, when that happened, you got a bunch of people trained
mm-hmm.
Who wanted to just work on big movies and get paid money. So what they did was that decreased the pool for people like us who were making smaller movies and didn't have much money.
Right.
But in the end, what it ended up doing was... that ended And yeah. You had a bunch of people that knew about films that also wanted to help people again and wanted to get more experience to work on the few big films that were coming here still.
Mm-hmm.
So what you ended up with was everybody working together and a happy ending. Now, how do we tie back to games? You know, I guess so when the Wild West ends, like how does the Wild West end here, right? I mean, do the bigger companies who are using Kickstarter and stuff, do they get so many designers under their wings that they just stop looking for more designers on the outside?
Well, the true Wild West ended when the federal government basically annexed the West and
right.
put it under federal law.
So right? That was something we talked about earlier. Like one way to end the Wild West
yeah.
would be to have Kickstarter shut down.
Yeah.
The only way we could see that, other than some stupid federal regulation that would shut it down, which I can't imagine anything. I mean, even if somehow they were going to try and force sales tax at a state level, I still think that it would be fine. But you and I had said, what if a high profile thing, what if Reading Rainbow, and
yeah.
it's $2+ million it's earned already, were to just jack everyone out of their money.
Yeah, and nothing happened, and all those people are out that money.
And we did a class action lawsuit,
right?
And we filed against Kickstarter, and we won.
Right.
That would be a problem for Kickstarter.
That would either A, shut down Kickstarter, or B, cause them to tighten up their backer requirements and regulations and restrictions so much that it would clamp down on a lot of the popularity and a lot of the progress that and a lot of the excitement of people backing projects.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if that were to happen, absolutely, I think that would help to draw that to a close, because I think a lot of small publishers wouldn't survive.
Absolutely.
I think the ones who are more established already, who have 6-7 games out there, would absolutely survive, because
they still struggle, though.
They would, right.
In addition to Kickstarter being a great way to fund projects, it's also free advertising. I mean, there's a huge audience of people who just come there on a daily basis just to see what's new and
right.
get excited about something new and have no other way to find out about that. So just
right.
basically as a community thing, Kickstarter disappeared, a major portion of that community, I think, would
yeah.
just vanish.
And I don't think that ends the Wild West as much as to say it causes a drought in the Wild West.
Yeah.
Because
causes the Dust Bowl.
Right. Only the publishers who people knew about, who knew to go to their website, right?
And the publishers have already built their own independent communities.
Right. Then, you know, because there are publishers, let's face it, that we see out there, and when I see a game they put on Kickstarter, I take notice, because
yeah.
I like their games,
yeah.
right? And enough people take notice that it would never matter, but, you know, for other smaller publishers, it could be really tough.
Yeah.
So, other than that, I mean, I don't really see, like, unless somehow Hasbro came through and started buying up all the small companies, that could be a problem, right? That would end the Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them doing that, because I don't think the small companies would sell out to Hasbro.
And there's no competition with Hasbro. I mean,
right.
unless there's a Catan published by an independent publisher or a new D&D that just explodes.
Right.
You know?
I could see that. If you get a mid-range publisher that publishes, like,
one
a new
game that just changes everything.
Yeah, that changes the world as for games. And I don't think we've seen that yet.
Game is Innkeepers.
I assure you it's not.
Thanks, idiot.
Anyway, so yeah, but I just mean, yeah, I think that, I guess that's my best answer to that. You kind of agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if the indie excitement goes away, it'll mean a return to the way things were 10 years ago when you've got Hasbro, and you've got Mayfair, and you've got Fantasy Flight. And in that time, we've also gotten AEG and Z-Man, and so a lot of the bigger Euro publishers will still be around. And there'll be some smaller guys like Dice Hate Me, like Crash Games.
Right, who are still publishing lots of games.
Right.
I mean,
Will Game Salute still be around? Because we've heard people be critical.
I've read some pretty scathing BGG posts of late, with unfulfilled things, and not that they're not going to get fulfilled, but that they're way behind schedule, and those things happen. But, you know, I mean, I do think if enough high profile people started jacking it up, in running away with money, even if Kickstarter didn't get in trouble for that, I would see faith start to dwindle. But people have been saying that bubble was going to burst for a while, right?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, as soon as somebody, like a few people, fail a Kickstarter, like to help with it, like to actually take the money and do something with it, people just aren't going to trust them anymore. And I don't think that's true.
Yeah,
I think people judge it on a case by case basis. Now, granted, if you're a Dice Hate Me and you've built a bunch of people up who trust you and they know that you're going to follow through, you're going to be fine no matter what. But you know, with myself, oh, I did one Kickstarter. I sent them copies of the game, and they were, he looked better than they did when you backed the game. Like,
sure.
But yeah, we've both had times where we've seen a game at Kickstarter that looked all right, and then you get it, and you're like, oh gosh, this isn't good.
Right. Yeah. So. I don't know. It's tough to say. It's kind of fun to imagine, but also a little sad to imagine such a scenario.
Right. Because right now,
It's fun. And you know what? The hobby is growing. It's grown like more than 50% every year for the past 4 or 5 years.
Right. You
know, the popularity, the audience, the buying power, the amount of money spent.
Right.
Is growing every year for years.
And I mean, with things like tabletop out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that are just introducing it to more and more people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it's just going to keep getting bigger. There's no reason for it not to.
You know, and I think a lot of this, the growing popularity of tabletop games in general, is a backlash from mobile games, from touch stuff, from you know, free or 99-cent iOS games that anybody can play for 10 seconds at a time that disconnects you from everyone else in the room. And families, I think, and people in general are seeking out personal contact and personal experiences.
Exactly, because,
friends.
I mean, so many people are saying,
right,
your phone is ruining your life.
Mm-hmm.
Tabletop games are kind of an answer to that.
Yeah,
so here's a way to spend physical time with your family.
Right. Or your close friends.
Right. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. Anyway, that's probably enough of that.
All right. So one more email I want to read here.
Yes.
This is a longer one. And so we're going to go through this, and then that'll be it for today.
Cool.
This is from our friend Thomas, who emailed us before. He said, "Hey, guys, glad you liked my last long and randomly theme-changing email. You said keep them coming, so here it is. I think you really hit the nail on the head with your emergent gameplay discussion. Great, because we felt like we floundered.
Totally lost it.
That it can hardly be grasped because it's hard to define, and it's, you know, that's, he agrees with us. Although I have to say, making a game with emergent gameplay behavior would be easy, depending on your definition. If emergent behavior is using the mechanisms of the game to achieve victory differently than the designer anticipated, then simply design a game and never play test it."
That's a good point.
That's really good. Better yet, don't tell anyone about it until it's published, and you'll have so much emergent behavior you don't know what to do with it. That is awesome. I'm sure you see this with your prototypes all the time. Absolutely. A different and often more measurable definition would be that a game has emergent behavior if new ways to play it can be found in general. If you take your example of Ticket to Ride, it makes sense that you win if you bought it, read the rules, interpreted it the way it should be played, and then teach others. You have the most experience. You have the most experience, so you win more often. By above definition, the game promotes emergent behavior. Sooner or later, someone will find a new way to play that is superior to your tried and true way that you play now. It doesn't necessarily mean you play badly, just that, like in chess, each singular strategy can be beaten. But it might require thinking outside the box. By this definition, Magic the Gathering has loads of emergent behavior, regardless of whether the story of card destruction was true or not. That was the tearing up the card and sprinkling it on the other card. Also, Rob, this one's for you, Rob.
Wait, I think everything he just said there about emergent gameplay and that concept is more concise and more clear and more intelligently presented than anything we stumbled through in that episode.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
In his defense, I mean, in our defense, he did type that. So he probably
he may have been working on that for three days.
Yeah. But thank you for that very concise thing. Also to Rob, I would like to say that you shouldn't be so quick to kill the OCS. That'd be the offset card system. Maybe Racket Wreckers and Splitters were flawed games. That does not mean the OCS was flawed. I think you could do a lot with it, probably way more than you imagined it to be. It doesn't have to be the focal point of an entire game either. I totally get that you have had enough with it for now, but I would advise you to keep it on the bottom of your toolbox. One day, it may be the perfect solution to a problem. Hey.
Huh?
Just like you could take a game you worked on, and then later, I swear, people, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
This is a nice tie-in.
You know, it's to that point, I am done with that for now. Maybe not forever. We'll see what happens. But I actually got a similar comment on Twitter from our friend Shu, who did a lot of playtesting on Monster Tea Party for me. And he kind of said the same thing, that he still thinks this is a really viable solution. And so I'll say to you and all the listeners, same thing I said to Shu. If you think you can make it work and you think you can get a good game out of it, do it. I would love to play that game. Just because I couldn't make it work doesn't mean it's a flawed system. I guess, you know, there's a whole lot of people out there that are a lot smarter than me. And if they can do something with that, if they can find inspiration from that, I support that 100%. My intention always was to make my own game kind of as a proof of concept,
right,
in the hopes that someone else, that other people might also find inspiration from that, come up with their own ideas. That was always the intention of the system.
Yep. Yeah. And we said that right away.
I failed in creating a proof of concept despite my best efforts.
But it was a concept, but there was no proof.
Yeah. But you know, hey, if someone else can make it work, I fully endorse that, and I would love to play test that game for you.
And Thomas even says in here he had some ideas for it too.
Oh.
Thomas, explore those ideas. We think that's awesome.
Yeah.
We would love somebody to fix the OCS for Rob.
Please do, yeah.
And then he also ends with, and I totally agree that Flip the Table is one of the best podcasts out there.
Absolutely. Yep.
Not taking away from your greatness, of course.
No, well, it's
thank
better.
You.
They're funny. They are funny than we are. Yeah.
There's more of them though, right?
There's four main guys, but they also have other people filling now and then. So
they're talking about inherently bad games, which of course that's funny.
I know.
I'm not saying they're not good at it. I'm just saying their jobs are a little easier than ours are.
Chris is a better editor than I am, though.
He's crazy good editing, and he adds in all the weird stuff.
They actually produce their show, whereas we just kind of vomit into the microphone and then I put it on the internet.
And then you chop it up a little
right.
bit. Yeah. But thank you, Thomas, for that.
Yeah.
And we'll save the other comments that we have for next week.
Next week, spectacular.
And that'll be great. So, go to our website, buy Water Balloon Washout. Go to our website, and soon you'll be able to buy Tea Party there.
Epic Monster Tea Party.
But you can already get it on GameCrafter.
Yep.
And the last week's show notes have a link in it.
Yep.
So check it out.
Yep.
Go buy those games.
You can also get the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking. That's just $11.99. Good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we have a game library. We have a BTG library now, man.
We do.
Yeah, we have three games available.
The BTG game library.
Ew. I don't know what that sound was. Anyway, am I forgetting anything?
If you want to contact us on Twitter, you can follow us at @podcastBTG, or you can follow Rob at @poorly_designed, or myself at @JASlingerland. You can also email us at buildingthegamepodcast.com. buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, you got it.
I'm so close.
Keep going.
You can also give us a 5-star review on iTunes, like us on Facebook. Find us somewhere else in the internet. I don't know what the next step
is. That's it. You just say goodnight.
That's it. And goodnight.
1, 2, 3. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
It's because it's happening that fast. LeVar Burton posted a thing. He looked like he was going to cry. He was so happy. I mean,
well, good. I mean, that's fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's a good thing. This is the kind of thing that Kickstarter really should be used for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is a real worthwhile project that will help children for tens of years to come, and is a fantastic, wonderful thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost at $2.2 million.
Yeah, good. That's great. I mean,
48,000 backers.
That's spectacular.
Yeah.
Hopefully more people will take note of that, because this is why crowdfunding is an amazing thing.
Right. Because it helps people.
Because it can really truly help people, and people can help people and not have to lean on corporations to help people, or
right.
the government to help people, which very often the two of them are working together and without the people's interests in mind. And that's
exactly.
My political rant for today.
Yeah. Yeah. Politics. Yeah. Fight the man.